If you're trying to figure out how to navigate the tricky tightrope of parenting while you have questions, doubts, and wonderings about your spiritual journey, our podcast is for you.
It doesn't matter if your kids are smalls, middles, or bigs. We'll explore what and how we're deconstructing from churchianity, harmful belief systems, and diving deep into the ways we can work this out in parenthood.
We're also going to work through ideas for reconstructing a space for our families to thrive under new systems of love and freedom.
We can't wait to bring you some hope that you're not alone and that it's really okay, even good, to explore all the possibilities that may have felt closed off in the past.
Our podcast is going to offer you grace and space to be exactly where you are and who you are.
We're really glad you're here, and we're excited for today's episode. Listen in.
You aren't going to mess up your kids' theology, Sarah Swartzendruber.
Hey everyone, welcome back to the Deconstructing Mamas podcast. We're talking with Sarah Swartzendruber today. She's a pastor who's passionate about empowering parents in deconstruction to create spiritual practices for their kids. And if you listen to our Meredith Miller episode, you're going to love this one too. Sarah, we're so excited to have you. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks for having me. Meredith and I are good friends, so it feels like lovely to have it in the same sentence.
I love that.
Yeah.
You guys have a lot of similarities, I feel like, not just in what you do, but just like the kind of people you are from what I know of both of you, which is really fun.
So fun.
So before we get into talking a little bit about what you do and how you can help us to create spiritual practices for our kids while we're deconstructing, what does your day look like? What does your family look like? And then what makes your heart come alive outside of some of your work stuff that I know you love, but outside of that?
Should we put parameters? No family and no work. Ooh.
Or what I love to do.
Yeah.
What makes your heart come alive?
Ooh, that's good. Okay. I'll take the challenge. Accepted. Yeah. Okay. My normal day. So I've got two little kiddos. I have a 3-year-old next week. She would love to remind you that. And then I have an 8-month-old. So my life is very much world of little kids, as well as I'm a pastor, as we talked about. So kind of that whole world. And then I run Parenting After Deconstruction, which is super fun. So that's kind of like my work day to day. But things I love that aren't that, I love to lift. And I feel like that's actually spiritual practice, which we can talk about more. But like, I've always been an athlete and love to run. I love playing soccer. It's fun and physical in some way. That's like a place I find joy. And I think it's probably like I get my competitive aggression out that I'm not allowed to really have other places. Maybe that's part of it. But that's a lot of who I am. I love and get so excited if you tell me we're going to go somewhere for some great Portland food or coffee or drinks or something. I love like getting excited about menus, and the anticipation and the excitement of that meal is probably just as great as that meal is. So that's kind of like my Portland world. So I love great intentional conversations with friends. And those are like the things probably that fill me up the most. If we could go somewhere beautiful on the water or hike or do something physical, or then like just having coffee and a great meal.
I love it.
Have you ever done a competition?
No. I've ran many races. So I just think of it all, like all interconnected. And I really think that for me to stay healthy, I think like one of my responsibilities as a pastor is to be a healthy human. And that to me is a part of being a healthy human. Like I need to go physically work out my junk so that I show up my best self, like to my kids and to like any form of, yes. I don't know, like my church or.
No, I love that. And I love too that there's kind of a shift now from working out because like we need to lose weight or we need to look a certain way. And I feel like people are moving now towards this other way of being like you're talking about, where they need to work out so that their body can be aligned with their soul, like, which I think is so much cooler. And in some ways, we're sort of deconstructing the exercise world, which I kind of love a lot.
But. Oh, yeah. I just before we were talking, I had a really hard morning this morning and I happened to be with Liz. And I said to her, I got to go for a walk. I just have to go for a walk. I got to get everything that's building up inside of me out.
Yeah.
Like worked out in my body. So it is true. I wasn't thinking like, oh my gosh, I better go for a walk so that I can stay skinny. It was like, I have all this nervous energy going on and now I need to go get that out and show up for my people better later.
Oh yeah.
Without all of that just sitting in there, swirling around and, you know, coming out in not so healthy ways. So. I do feel better now that I went for a walk.
Good.
So if you had to describe your faith background in a word or phrase, what would it be? And then how has it changed? And then what word or phrase would you use now?
It's a good hard question. I would just like to state. When I reread your notes last night, I was like, I don't know. So I said mystery. I think mystery properly describes how I was raised. I was raised asking a lot of questions. My dad's a prof, and my mom was right alongside him in terms of like, I got raised in those conversations where we got to ask all the questions. That was very much my family upbringing. But at the same time, with mystery, I got raised in a Presbyterian church. I don't have this evangelical background till later, but I definitely think that Presbyterian spaces are evangelical, which they would all cringe at me saying that. And like they have a lot of similarities. So the mystery was allowed, and yet there was a lot of like rootedness in Christ, if that makes sense. So kind of this mystery while also like this rooted kind of words. Today, I would still lean into mystery, but for a really different reason. I just think there's no question that shouldn't be on the table when we talk about our faith. I think all of it is worth questioning. And we should be encouraging that questioning. And I think we should be telling kids they get to ask all the things and not with the end goal of like, you need to believe X, Y, and Z, but with the end goal of like, that's how we create critical thinkers. And that is who we want to be in life. I want to be a critical thinker who always is growing and changing. And for me, the mystery of God, which is where I've landed, allows me to do that. And I love that. So, kind of different reasons, if that makes sense.
You had this middle thing that you just alluded to quickly, where you said you grew up in a Presbyterian church, mystery, and probably some certainty or just some tradition or whatever. And then you kind of where you are now. But did you walk any kind of middle with an evangelical scenario?
I work for Evangelical Church as a youth pastor. That's my first kind of introduction into ministry. As a reminder, I never wanted to be a pastor or planned to be a pastor. I planned to be a teacher, and I thought I would go be a youth pastor for a hot minute, do some summer camps, and go back to teaching. So that's kind of a shocking entry point where like that whole church blew up in really painful ways. I have a really crummy boss in the mix of that. Crummy and creepy, So there's that. And then I think I go to college also in evangelical spaces for the first time ever. And that's a bunch of 18-year-olds. There's some incredible parts of that experience. For me, it's not all bad and it's not all good. I think that's really important. Like when I first would have come out of those experiences, I would have said they were all bad. And now the language I would have had is like, that's actually a really important part of deconstructing, is like tearing it all apart and having permission to do that. Now I think I would hold it more like those spaces were really fascinating because I was brought into a culture and I never felt like I fit in that culture. And yet I decided to go be a pastor, and I was sure that I couldn't be a pastor because of those spaces. So, kind of for me, there's always this like both and to that.
So good.
That feeling of not really knowing like where you belong. And I want to like bring that up because I think that's a common feeling, right? When you're like deconstructing your faith or starting to deconstruct your faith, you're sort of like, where do I fit in, right? Like for at least for some of us who are listening to this podcast, like want to still sort of have some tie to our faith background, which makes it like almost even harder. Like I'm like, can we just like if we could just sever ties, it would be so much easier. But instead, you're kind of pulled between these two worlds and a lot of people don't understand. So relationships are lost. And I'm wondering, like, as you deconstructed and then you're like now you're a pastor, right? So you're still involved in that, but you have some more progressive type beliefs. Have you felt like you have been misunderstood by people because of that? And now maybe or in the past?
Where do we start and where I felt misunderstood? Like, I'm a female millennial pastor. I've never fit. Like, I've just never fit. And I started as a youth pastor, and every single person in that room was a man, and they talked a certain way and they looked a certain way. And I was just like, ugh, like, this is weird. Like, why does this exist? And I came out of a world, right, where I was like in this elementary teacher world. And I think what's fascinating about those two worlds is the elementary teacher world, no one ever paused No one ever questioned my ability to be a teacher. In fact, I've been praised for my skills as a teacher my entire life because I looked a certain way, because I fit their mold. And then I walked into a space that I would argue was teaching, but with a specific topic of theology. And all of a sudden, it was like the most wild, like it just was such a weird opposite reaction. And I was at the dentist literally Monday, and all they can talk about is like, they can't ever get over, like, I can't, yeah, you just don't look like a pastor. You don't seem like a pastor. I don't know if that's a compliment or I should be offended at this point. You know, like, I'm like, why are we still talking about it? I just have always felt like it didn't work since I decided to be a pastor. So, in denominational spaces where my theology might align more closer, or we technically by the book would align in some of those, like some specific denominations, they want me to be a denominational person to interact with me. And because I don't want to be in their denominations, like sometimes there's a disconnect. And in basically any non-denominational world, specifically in Portland, like we're still really slow to have progressive churches that are non-denominational. Like us and like a couple others, we're it. Theologically, there's just always been so many disconnects. And it started with me as like this younger female. Like the next layer is I'm not married to my co-pastor. My husband's an engineer. And like people don't know what to do with that next piece of it. It's like they're grasping for things. And so the fact now that I have kids is maybe like the first thing that people can kind of start to relate to. I don't know. It's a strange experience, moral of the story.
So when you say you're a pastor, are you just a straight up pastor, or are you sort of put in the role of children's pastor? We know you are brilliant and have such a passion about children and faith, and that's why you're on here, and that's why we are so excited to have you.
So there's two of us that planted Cascade, and we're co-pastors. We're the two of the church. So we kind of do all the things. Within that, I've always written all of our kids' curriculum. And like last night, I ran youth group. And we kind of planted the church saying that our kids and our students are just as important as our adults. And so we're going to prioritize and kind of power flip that message and language. I still preach in the other spaces. But does that make sense? It's like, it's a 50-50 of what you see me in.
That's so cool. I've never heard of that. It's almost like, oh, we have a church, and then maybe we have a kids' ministry, or we'll just have it, but it's over here on the side or something, and they're not as valuable of people. So that's just a huge deconstruction thing right there. Right? Flipping the narrative that children are just as valuable as adults.
When you prioritize kids' experiences and say, like, their questions that they're asking, I actually think are the things that are gonna, for lack of a better term, like heal my own heart and heal kind of like what the church has done. Like, I think if we actually listen to our middle school and high schoolers right now, they're incredible humans and they are pretty uninterested in a lot of our systems and they know inclusion like we don't. And I think if you actually give those voices power, my experience is like your faith can't be radically shifted. So, yeah, that's why we do that.
That's just so healing too. Like even just hearing you say that, like that a child's voice would matter, right? Or that you would say like, oh, these teens and like these preteens, like they know something that I don't. Like that in itself is just so healing, and not the way that any of us grew up, not just in our faith cultures, but just, I mean, in our culture in general, but this idea that kids are like, right, we're seen and not heard. You toe the line. Your parents are the authority. Just the freedom for kids to have a voice is like is so huge and healing with this next generation, and I'm just excited to see what happens there.
When I look at like my own kind of evolving faith journey, deconstructing, reconstruction, it was when my son was 13 and he started to ask all these questions. And I remember him saying, like, are you sure that all the people just in the Bible who heard God's voices weren't just like schizophrenic? I mean, just he was like,
No, I'm not sure.
I
That's
know. And then
the end
I
of
was
that.
like, and I was a psych major, and I was like, oh, you have a really good point. And then what happened for me was I said to myself in that situation, what if they're right and what if I'm wrong? And not only did it switch my faith, it switched my parenting. Because then it made it like, what if they're right about a lot of things? And what if I'm wrong? I mean, this is the kid that called out my, like, you're just using the guilt card. Yeah, I'm not responding to that. Are you afraid, Mom? Because I'm not taking on all your fear. when I'm a senior and you don't want me to go to prom weekend, that's on you. That's not on me. Wait, didn't we have a friend, Liz, that recently said their six-year-old said to them, that's a you problem, mom.
100%.
Oh, yeah, that's a you problem. I love that. I mean, I kind of love that because a lot of times it is, right? Like a lot of times if we really look inward, we're like, whoops, that's our issue and has nothing to do with you. And yeah, that's cool. I love that. I love what you guys are doing.
As we think about deconstructing, like that's the whole thing. I think we make the leap of like, when I'm parenting my kid, I'm parenting myself, right? We all know like the inner child voice in ourselves. Like that's actually who I'm parenting is me. And also hopefully my child, right? But like, I think the thing that we need to help people make that leap of is like, that's happening with spirituality too. So we are all reacting to whatever theology or whatever's happened. We are reacting how we're talking about that to our kid. And we are trying to theologically parent ourselves and our kids. And I don't think that's bad. I just think it's worth noticing that sometimes it's not about the kid. And so when you've deconstructed, you start to project your questions and you read the books that actually you needed to read your inner child to your kid, even though it may not be developmentally appropriate at all yet for that child, but you're projecting your developmental stage onto your kid. And that's like my whole parenting after deconstruction cohort. Let's just think about how kids' brains work around spirituality and when that makes sense so that we're parenting them where they are and you're doing your own work or you're noticing like, oops, that wasn't about you, that was about me. Like, let's move on, you know, that kind of stuff. So when those light bulbs go off for folks, that's the stuff that like, I could do it all day. Like, I don't know how to explain it. It's just like thrilling to me when people start to connect it.
I love it.
So
preach, preach.
Yeah. I was just thinking about, say, if I were a young mom right now, my complicated relationship with the Bible.
Mm-hmm.
So I have a grandson, right? I have a complicated relationship with the Bible. Everything in me would be like, oh, I don't know if he should read the Bible.
Yes.
What if he wants to?
Yes.
And he doesn't have all those wounds I have.
Yes.
It's so hard to really allow the children to lead.
It's so hard. Like we say that, like it's so simple. But when you actually play that out, it is so complicated. So my dad died of cancer. Like it'll be the 4-year anniversary this year. And so, you know, we talk about my dad all the time with my daughter. And she is grasping for language to try to figure out where's Papa. Like we're talking about Papa, he's not here. How do I place that? And something that she's grabbed onto, not because I think she needs to, is she talks about like, oh, Papa's with Jesus. And in some ways, theologically, I have no idea. I have no idea where my dad is. And I've done all that deconstructing. I've asked all the questions and like, whatever, but that's not helpful to my concrete thinking young child. She needs to grab something and have a place and location. And I don't need to help her deconstruct that today. That's not my job. My job is to be like, Kinsley, tell me about that. What do you think it looks like? What do you think it looks like where Papa is right now? Like, what do you think he's eating? Like, I'm trying to access her, what makes sense to her. And then when she's like, I want to talk about princesses. I'm like, cool, me too. You know, let's change the subject and like, hop from a Jesus conversation into what matters to her. And when I actually let her lead, it's difficult because you're doing internal backflips around the theology. You know, anyways, I was talking about this all day. So
yeah.
Do you have a special love, it seems like, for middle schoolers and high schoolers?
Oh, yeah. I don't know today who I love the most. I think whatever room of a kid or student you put me in, I would tell you that's my favorite room to be in right then.
Aww.
Since you get to be in, I think you're 0 to 12th grade, right?
Yeah, I mean, I'm in all of them. I'll tell you, I like those more than adults because the conversations, they're not sure that they know who they are and what has to be. Like, there are no absolutes. And I like working in that room. Adults, we think we know everything. Mm-hmm. If we're willing to say that or not, we're pretty sure we know what we think that. Like, you can't really change our minds. Like, kids and students will listen differently. And I'm interested in that.
So can you tell us sort of what your favorite thing is that you've learned from Faith about kind of each stage? You're living it with your preschoolers, right? Right now?
Yeah. And I was pre-K teacher. So like pre-K and middle schoolers are the same. Just know they're the same. But they have a little bit of differences in what they're capable of in their games. But like they're both like kind of gangly, struggling with their body, trying to figure out their bodies. So I like my sixth graders specifically, and 3-year-olds feel the same. Okay, what's my favorite thing out of each? Okay, I was just with middle schoolers last night, and they're a wild group. I'm not gonna lie to you. This is like the hardest youth group last few years. I think it might be a COVID thing. I don't know. Or it's just our crew right now. My favorite thing about them, the theology is so different in that room. And I think, like, I've done youth ministry a long time. I feel like I should be like good at it at this point. And this year, I felt like I again had to kind of like reshift, rechange. And I don't know how to explain that because I think you could say like that makes me wishy-washy or something, probably would be an argument in this space. But I think to actually understand that room, what they're asking is totally different than it was 3 years ago. And I can't pin it yet.
What kind of questions do they ask?
With inclusivity, they pronoun everyone in the room as they, them until specified otherwise. That's totally different than a few years ago in an inclusive church and inclusive space. But their language is totally different. And they're like, oh, I don't know, your pronouns were he, him previously, and now you want she, her, or he, they. Like, they just, like, great, move on. Like, no blinking.
It's just a part of like
Their culture.
part of just who they are and how they approach the world and like see the world. Yeah. Which is really cool.
Super cool. Incredible.
I love this, just in what we're trying to do here on the podcast, is it's okay to grow and change. Faith is ever evolving, constantly growing and changing. And the whole curious wonder piece is a big deal for us as we're grown-ups. And that's the fascination I have with children, is just their ability to wonder and be curious and not have everything wrapped up in a nice bow. And isn't that one of the best lessons we could ever learn? I mean, I don't ever want to have finished. Never. Never. So,
Not at all. And pre-K, their brains are so interesting because a pre-K brain, right? Like they're in concrete learning. And so what I mean by that is like if I say it's A and B or it's pink and purple, they're like, it's pink and purple. But then let's say you say it's pink and purple, but it also could be blue and we don't really know. And like, what are your questions? Like their brain specifically can nuance that in a way that you can't once you're older, like 12 years old plus. We can't nuance the same ways. And so what I think is really interesting about those like 3, 4, 5 year olds, you know, I say to them like, God is he, God is she, God is they, and they're like, cool. And that's not complicated for them. It's us that it's complicated for. And so I think that age group is fascinating for that. I think elementary, then you get to start expanding more of those stories around like, okay, but why is God he and why is God she and why could God be they? And then you really get to spiral teach and unpack, unpack, unpack. And then middle school, high school, all cards are on the table. Let's ask all the questions. Like last night, I did like a weirdo meter, which is a Meredith Miller thing. We had like something is soups weird and something's like not weird at all. And then they had to put on that chart like how weird the story was throughout the details that we were telling. And they're pretty honest.
Was it a Bible story?
It was Jesus's birth. We're doing like Jesus's timeline. And so I had them go investigate, reread Jesus's birth story and like what are clues that we get? Like read this as an investigator and what clues do we have from the text? What do we know actually? Like what do you actually think is true basically? And then you put it, how weird is that fact and how not weird? And they love it.
That's so powerful. Like, here, you guys can actually learn. It seems like such a simple way of approaching like the Bible with teenagers, but I'm like, no one ever did that with me. There's no what do you think? And maybe you see this in a different way than I do. It was like, this is what it is. And if you don't think this, you are wrong. Like, it's, yeah, I mean, that's so cool.
It reminds me of the other night, Liz and I are in a book club, and we have a high school English teacher in that book club. She's come on our podcast. She was on in the first season, Jenny Shannon. She is going through reading The Red Tent. And then we just read the Bible story about Dina in the Old Testament, but she did exactly what you did with us. She took us like through the weirdo meter, kind of without us knowing it was the weirdo meter. And like we were just allowed to unpack that story as it was written in the Bible very differently. And one of my daughters happens to be in that book club, and she said, I would never have gotten out of that story what I got out of it without the ability for us to just be like, that was weird. This is not okay. What's missing? Mm-hmm. And I don't actually think that's true. And why didn't why isn't she telling the story? Mm-hmm. Why is it coming through the lens of her brothers? And it was just, was so fascinating. What a gift you're giving. Mm-hmm. Here I am, I'm 57, I guess, right now. Mm-hmm. And I've never, ever been able to do that. Mm-hmm. Never had somebody do that with me mm-hmm. where I was allowed. So, and that's perfect for that age range.
Oh, yeah.
That's the stuff I should have been doing in junior high and high school instead of memorizing scripture and being on a Bible quiz team to make sure I knew all the facts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that we should empower these spaces. Like, here's your toolkit of life. And like, we're in your tool belt in terms of like, if you want to access a loving and caring God, and you have reminders of people who loved you in that journey, not as a manipulative thing, like that you need to be in the club or out of the club, but like, hey, this is another thing in life. If this works for you, like, you can always access it. You can always come back to it. We empowered you to ask all the questions, and that's a part of life. It just feels like real instead of like, I don't know, like who's in or who's out. You know, for years, like I've read all these studies about like, why can't we keep kids in church? Like they graduate. And I really think, like, I don't have the data to back it up in terms of like years and years of this happening. But I just really think that when we made it all these rules to be in a space, like we didn't actually hand people anything that sustained over time. Like we didn't allow people to be critical thinkers. Then of course you're going to like dip out when it doesn't work anymore for you. Like that's not something that works. My friends are not in church spaces because of that. So it's a different thought.
Yeah.
Yeah. We'll be right back to the rest of today's podcast episode, but first, we want to give a shout out to some of our amazing and faithful Patreon supporters, Shelley David, Bethany Foster, and Sarah Turner. For just $3 a month, you can help us keep the lights on and at the same time, be a part of our safe and private Patreon community, where you won't feel so alone in this changing faith and parenting journey, and there are also lots of extras. We hope to see you there. Now, back to the episode. So your quote said, you aren't going to mess up your kids' theology.
You're not.
And I know, I feel like I did. Mm-hmm. And we're unpacking that now. A lot of people probably listening to the podcast feel like we are.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
We're screwing them up in many different ways. So how do we unwind all those fears about messing our kids up? Because I don't know. This is like so scary. We're so nervous going through this process.
Yeah. I think you first have to identify you. You have to do all your work first, which is like, what are the things that even though I've deconstructed, like what are my deepest fears here? And like, what are my make or breaks? What are the things I've moved away from? What are the things then that I'm like, no, these are the things that I want to tell my kids about who God is or whatever, the divine, however that language works for you. Because I don't think it's a one size fits all. And I don't think what I think needs to work for someone else. But I do think that you have to be like, I've done all the tearing down of what I didn't want. What do I want? And I think that's kind of the starting points, whether someone has kids in college or, you know, really young little kids, to be like, when you list that out with people and you say like, this is my dogma, which a lot of folks' dogma was really different. And I think like the make or breaks are pretty small in a lot of our circles these days. And then you kind of go out like, okay, then what are the practicals? Like, what are the ways that like I'm going to try to foster those make or breaks? I think all of that work actually is a lot harder than having conversations with our kids. And then we have to just learn and think about kids' brains and go through like, how do we talk to kids based on the age that they are and really focus in on kind of realistic expectations. So like, if I've done all that work on myself of like, this is what I want for my kids. I want my kids to know that God's loving and that God loves you literally no matter what. And my daughter right now is 3. I do not expect our conversations to last longer than 3 minutes, really ever, about those conversations. And so like things that I think are really simple is when you're talking to your kid, like it doesn't have to be this 20-minute intentional in-depth conversation. Like how can you just integrate it into your life, the things that they're passionate about, and then you've done your work to say, I know that I want you to know that God's loving, and I'm going to point out a loving God, even though it may not sound like hey, Kinsley, God is loving. For me, that would be like, we go on a walk. And Kinsley's like, look how pretty the sky is, mom. And I'm like, yes, the sky is so blue. It is so lovely. And to me, I am going back to that one goal of talking about a loving God. And I know that like sounds indirect, but I think when you start noticing, and it's less of like, I have to have this weird pastor God voice when we have a conversation, and I have to like put on my pastor hat. When I think like this integrated lifestyle and this holistic of like the divine is all around us and we can interact with theology and conversations all the time. It's just noticing it.
Yeah.
So that's my whole thing.
I think as parents, it's we feel like it can't be that simple almost. You know
Yes.
what I mean? Like we're trying to overcomplicate it, that it can't
Yes.
really be that simple. And Esther and I were in a conversation earlier and just talking about how when kids' basic needs are met, right? Like when they're seen and they're respected and they're loved, and like, you know, you're on a walk with your daughter and she's talking about this and you're saying, wow, yes, I see that too. That's so cool. And you're just sort of like meeting them in that moment. You're giving them the foundations for their own child development, which will then give them, right, the foundations for that critical thinking later on. And so it's like,
Yes.
it doesn't feel like you're doing the spiritual work
Yes.
because you're not like, here, sweet pea, we're going to sit down and read about Noah, which is
Yeah.
how a lot of us were brought up.
Yeah.
But instead, it's a little bit more like nuanced and a little bit more like it's hard to nail down as a formula. And we like when we're deconstructing, like we don't like that. Like that's really
Yeah.
hard for us. So then it's
Yeah.
hard for us to do with our kids.
Yes.
But that's what I hear you saying is like it's actually like you can completely simplify it. And in the long run, it's going to be powerful. And I'm wondering if you've been able to witness that in any kids whose lives you're in, right? Like your kiddos are pretty little, but like in kids that, you know, that were maybe younger students and now they're middle schoolers,
Yeah.
and you've seen that play out for them where now they're able to kind of find God in their own way. Can you talk about that a little bit, how you've seen that?
I think anyone could do faith development. I want to be clear on that. And I think parents, like, I want to empower parents to be doing like faith conversations, even if they're not sure. But I want to empower them with also like, do your own work first. You can pause them if you are doing your own work, but please do your own work. And I also caveat that with like, there's this weird church thing where we just kind of throw anyone in with kids. And that's also to me incredibly irresponsible.
Yes.
Not everyone, just because you've had kids, does that mean that you should be doing like theological development? Because like, you've never taken like a child development class. And also, like, theology, to me, that's a room you can actually do some of the most damage. So please.
Yes.
Like, if you're a church or a pastor, please don't just throw anyone in there and don't just use any kids' curriculum. Like, that drives me crazy. All of that to say, yes, I think for me, where it gets really exciting is when a parent texts me, frankly, and they're like, hey, my kid came home, and our one-liner at Cascade after every single lesson is using your skill of curiosity. What are some questions you have from the story? And then we do question asking back and forth with kids and whatever the teacher facilitator is in that space. And to me, like the biggest wins are when kids then take those questions home and start doing back and forths with their parents. And so those kids are modeling to the parent who didn't get to ask any question that we are empowering their kid. It's all on the table. It's all fair. Ask away. Some of our upper elementary that have come into middle school, I think if you said something to them, like something around like LGBTQ, gender inclusion, that stuff, I think they would be like, what do you mean that when you were in high school, like certain people weren't allowed to be included based on who they wanted to love? When they react to you and it's just so like, huh. And they've been so empowered a different message and a different message in a church space, and it's been modeled, and like those are the people in front of them. I think to me, those are the powerful moments. I had this privilege of this conversation with a high school student. I mean, this is like years ago now, like 7 years ago. And we're driving home and they come out to me like in that conversation in the car. And you know, I'm doing my like best pastoring. And so I'm like, I just want to remind you how much I love you. Like there's room for you. I'm doing all that. And she like cuts me off and she's like, cool. Sarah, I know. I don't need to be told. Like you've been telling me this for years. I'm more interested, like, are you going to do anything about climate change? It's the non-issue for them. And for me, that's like when the transformation comes, right? I'm projecting my narrative of what I wish would have been told in church spaces for me so that my friends could have been included in churches. And then I'm doing that as the pastor. And then my little high schooler comes in and is like, yeah, we've done it. We asked the questions. I get it. Go fix some things, you know? So I guess for me, those are the moments where like it's played out. It's awesome. Yeah.
So cool.
Well, that's so good. Yeah, you just can't believe the slow shift that just naturally takes place over time.
Yeah.
My kids are way more inclusive just because of the environment they were in,
Yeah.
just because of the friends they had, because of how they're living their lives. It's like that's not even a question that ever came into their brain.
Yeah.
I mean, I wish I had been the mom that was much more ready for that stuff. But the good news for me is they, again, like we were saying, they were able to flip me on my head because if we always put ourselves in a posture of curiosity, who knows what we all currently think now that could also be wrong that the next generation's going to flip on its head.
Yes.
I might think I'm so deconstructed, I'm so open, I'm so curious, and then they're going to come after me with a whole different thing or their kids. Like I get curious about what my grandson is going to do to my daughter of something she has no clue that she needs to change about her life or rethink or revisit, which is, I'm so about kids being our teachers. It does make sense to me why Jesus said, become like a little child or let them come because I do not hinder them. Like he wasn't afraid of them and their questions and their stuff either, which is just shows how we can get so bogged down by our own rightness or our own authority, as Liz said.
I think also like kids let us try things on. So like I always say that to them, like you get to permission to experiment. So I'm going to try on a theology is like one of the ways I say it to them. Like I'm going to try it on and I might take it off and be like, didn't like that. Or like, ooh, that was a weird style for a hot minute. But like I can try it on permission to change. And if I'm asking that for myself, I also expect that from them. I think for me, that's where there's so much empowerment. We're on a journey together. This is not, you have to get into a club because of salvation. Those are never words that I'm going to ever say. And when you take all of that pressure off, I actually think that like is what to me pastoring is like coming alongside people. That's a privilege that people let me into their lives. That's not an expectation. That's vulnerable. And that's like a really divine, holy space. And I need to be really responsible in those spaces, specifically with kids, to try things on, take it off, because that's what we're doing.
Sarah, what you're doing is so beautiful. And, you know, people often will say to me, like, oh, well, you just like don't want your kids to go to church. You just don't want your kids to be a part of community, right? Or like you just hate Christians. And it's like, no, I don't. Like, what I'm looking for is what you're describing, which is this beautiful, loving, inclusive place where people don't have to be the same. They can just be. And it's not exhausting. And it's not who can get there faster. And I think that's what a lot of us crave that we're just not finding. And so it gives me a ton of hope to hear you talk. It does make me want to move to Portland a little bit.
Right.
We'll teach you how to lift. We'll do all the things.
Yes, all the things.
So I do have like a little question related to something you said that I wonder if I have it, maybe other people have it. You said do all your inner work, right? But is that really the reality that it's so we do all our inner work and then we have children?
No.
Right. So I guess that like messy place of, oh my gosh, I'm still screwed up in so many ways.
Yeah.
Let's say I decide that any violence in my parenting is not right. Any kind of violence, spanking, yelling. But I've been raised where I've, you know, had authoritarian models, yelling, spanking, and everything. And so I suddenly revert to those things. Even though I've, in my head, I've done it, it's still playing out in the messy middle.
Yeah.
What would you say to all of us moms out here that are like, oh my gosh, so what am I supposed to do? What if my inner work isn't caught up to like my,
Yeah.
how it plays out? Like when my kid's flipping out at me
Yeah.
and my old authoritarian self is going, and I picture this with parents of high schoolers, you don't get to talk to me like that. You respect me.
I mean, I haven't had a high schooler in my house, so I'm going to be really careful how I answer this question. But I think what I can speak to is When I'm talking about doing your inner work, what I'm talking about is specifically when you get into conversations of theology, which I have to talk to my kids' volunteers all the time. For years, I just wanted kids' volunteers to teach how they wanted to teach. And then I realized when you've deconstructed, you have no idea how to teach the Bible. Like, you have no idea what you're ready to go say. And so you usually have to hand someone a script of what to say, which as a teacher, I hate scripts. So I'm like, that's the worst thing I could ever do. But so you hand someone a script and then they read a kid's script to a 3, 4, 5 year old. And then the most incredible thing that happens theologically is they're like, I don't want to say that. Or they're like, they get hot. Or they're like, I'm not comfortable saying that. Which to me is like when we get to get curious. So when you get that like kind of like, or like, oh no, I went back to that authoritative model. And why did I do that? And what do I still believe? And actually, is the dogma. That's why I said we have to start with like, what are your make or breaks? What do you want? Because I think if we've agreed, these are the make or breaks you said you wanted, it doesn't play out when we say these things anymore. So either we got to start reflecting on, hey, I still react to certain topics a certain way because there are literal pathways in my brain that's where I go back to. And that's okay. Like, let's have grace and be like, no big deal. I noticed that. I'm going to try it differently next time. That's where I want to empower parents that you can't mess up because you will mess up, right? You will mess up. I will mess up. I will say something in a lesson to a kid or to my own kid and think, oof, that really wasn't what I wanted to say. And then I think the empowering thing is that I get to like, return back to that kid. If I say they hold just as much power as I do, say, hey, I'm sorry. I would love to rethink that conversation. And often we get stuck on the things again because of our own background, what our brains are telling us. And sometimes kids aren't there with us. And sometimes I think theologically, specifically, what I'm speaking to is they didn't even catch the thing I said because their world is so different than mine. And then it's like so relieving to be like, huh. Okay. And then like we move on together. To me, that's the work that's continuous. This isn't a formula. This isn't one and done. This isn't like A plus B equals C. This is a journey that I'm on, that my kid is also on. And I'm saying, I'm coming alongside you and I'm going to keep doing my work so that I keep showing up as my best self. And theologically, I'm noticing the things that trigger me and why they trigger me and what are other messages I got and how can I start to really notice that? I think a really easy example, something I talked about being Presbyterian, and I had an incredible Presbyterian experience. So like if anyone's been raised Presby, we love you so much. But like I got raised Presby USA and something, they're like, you know, more progressive Presbyterians. But like one of the messages I got still in that space and why I've really realized kind of some of those evangelical ties is this yuck of self. Like the theology was you are bad. You are all bad. And because you are so bad, you know, Jesus died for you on the cross. But I don't know, all the language. I can't even like really get back to it. But something I've had to really realize about myself is I'm always telling kids like, God loves you so much. God is love. And I think that's an incredibly important message. And I stand by that. And also, we should note that part of the reason I am so committed to telling kids that is I'm reacting to a really different messaging that I got. I don't think that that is a bad message to give a kid that God is love, but I also better go do all of that back work so that something doesn't slip out theologically that is weird, you are bad language, that is like all those pathways that I got told in my most influential pivotal years that still exist. Does that make sense? So it's like this both and.
Yes.
How do we rework it? How do we reimagine? But then instead of just rejecting what you came out of, how can we say, okay, I don't want to do that. I don't want to say those things. But like, I have to also acknowledge that those exist in me and then figure out if I actually want to change the narrative, if I actually want to rework this with my kid, it's going to take a lot more work internally. So that's what I mean. You can't mess it up. We're all messing it up simultaneously. And so let's like notice, let's rework, let's change, let's reimagine instead of just like avoiding,
right.
Which is, I guess, my tendency
right.
when things are hard.
Yeah. One of the things I hear you say there is just the ability for us to be on a human journey with our kids.
Yeah.
It's like, actually, I did mess up, And so I'm going to circle back around and say I messed up, which gives them us all permission to grow and change and learn. And we're all coming at this from a posture of, I'm trying this on. I tried it on for 40 years. Actually, I need to take this off now. And
Yes.
guess what? You get to do that too.
The authenticity piece that, like, Esther and I talk about that a lot. And in my own therapy, it's been coming up a lot with my therapist about how important it is for us to view authenticity in our caregivers and for us to show that to our kids, right? It's like our initial reaction is like, ah, hide the icky stuff because it might like leak all over them, these poor impressionable souls, right? True in some ways, but also like them seeing us be authentically human is really important. And I also really like that you brought up the whole idea of like neural pathways, because for me on my journey, it's been very helpful and healing for me to say, my brain has been wired this way. And not to say that it can't be rewired, but like, let's have a little grace here because this is actually like some scientific chemical stuff going on. Can't really stress that enough, especially for people who have trauma or who have other mental health stuff that they're dealing with. What's happening in your brain is like a big component to this. And learning how to care for yourself is huge. And like you said, being able to have grace for yourself and say, like, you know what? This isn't really like my fault. Like, yes, now I have to clean it up and yuck, I'm sorry that we have to do that, but it's not like your fault is really healing too.
And like how you talk to your kid then with their brain, right? So we get to have permission to have like pathway experiences. And also, we're doing that about theology, right? And we're thinking through not every age should hear every story in the Bible. Like, if you are feeling comfortable with reading the Bible, like, I would never read a young kid Noah's Ark. That's a terrifying story. Like, at what point did we decide, because it's the Bible, like, we're gonna read all the scary stories to our young kids and we're not gonna think that's gonna implant some like really scary messaging? I can't. It gets me all fired.
But there's a rainbow, Sarah. There's a rainbow.
And a dove.
There's a rainbow, and there's like a dove, and there's promises. So it's got to be good for kids.
And cute animals.
And cute animals.
Two by two.
I'm here for it. I love a good cute animal. I'm not gonna lie to you. I'm a sucker.
My daughter's blanket, her baby blanket, was Noah's Ark. I mean, it was nothing more than just all the animals and a rainbow and some doves. But, like, what are we doing? I mean, I just, sorry.
I remember though, Esther, when Lila was born, my daughter was born, like she's six, so like 7 years ago now, I guess, when all that began. But I remember thinking, like, I really wish that like Noah's Ark wasn't tainted for me because it's such a cute little like rainbows and animals and boats and like the theme is so adorable. And I was like, I can never go back to where I'm like actually okay with that. But there is like the whole idea of like what's developmentally, I mean, we could probably have our own podcast on like what's developmentally okay for like each age group and whatever, but I think that's such an important piece. Like, what is developmentally appropriate for your kid to know or not know? And I think that's like child development might even be like a more important first step, right? To like to helping our kids through like this whole spiritual piece, because we have to know like what they're able to handle and what how they're going to absorb things before we can do any of the other stuff.
Yeah, I think it's hand in hand. So that's what we do in the Parenting After Deconstruction cohort. And so the first 2 weeks, we're working only on you. People are always like, Sarah, I came here because I wanted to learn about the brain and how to talk about like what you're talking about. And I hear that. I think it's just so hand in hand of like, yes, we can give you the formula in terms of like, hey, this is a neurotypical kid, what we know research-wise about like what kids can and can't do, and kind of really helping them conceptualize that young brain is capable of having simpler, what we would call, which aren't actually simpler conversations. If you've taught younger, it's much harder to do it well. I think we just think like, I just won't say. But to teach well to each of these age groups and then to add to the story, that's not easy. And that to me is always like the first sign when you meet with other pastors, you're like, it's not that hard to write and talk to kids. You're like, oh, fascinating. Like, tell me about it. Like, to actually keep kids' attention and yeah, to talk to them instead of to us, that's really hard because we're not in the same place. What matters to us does not matter to them. And that's hard to do, I think.
I think this is so powerful and what you have to say. Can you just tell us really quickly to bring it down to your two kids?
Oh, they're the best.
And what your make it or break it, you call them?
Yeah, my make it or break it.
Your make it or break it. Could you share what your make it or break it are with your kids, maybe your family dogma?
Yeah.
And then we'll wrap up. But I didn't want to wrap up until I heard your personal make it or break it.
Yeah.
The thing that I always tell them is like, we love ourselves, we love God, and we love others. To actually live that out is like flipping power system. So what I mean by that is like, I think Jesus and what I hope my kids hear over and over and over again is that Jesus was someone that looked in the room and like flipped power and gave power away. And I think that's incredibly, to me, impactful to give to your kids. So like, how do you have power in this space? How do you share that power? And where are places you actually need to step away from? And what are places you need to hear that your voice is loud and can be heard here too? So for us in our family, that's kind of simplified into that like triangle of like, how do you love ourselves? Because that's key. I just told you all my like trauma around that. How do I love others? So how do you love your friends today at childcare? She's got BFF there. Like, how do we not headbutt accidentally our BFF Levi? Because we love others, right? And then like, what does it mean to love God for you today? So for my daughter, sometimes we pray, sometimes we do that. And she prays for the dentist literally every time that we pray. And I have no idea why. Like, she's obsessed with our dentist. It's a strange thing. And to me, that's like loving God. Like, that's like that weird extension to that. So yeah, those are probably kind of
That's awesome.
my tenets.
I like that self is
Yeah.
first. Oh yeah. You know, because it was always like,
It was always last.
Jesus, others, you.
right? And I like that self is first because that gets so neglected,
Yeah.
and then everything else crumbles when self is when you don't know how to love yourself. So
Yeah.
I love that. I think you're doing such good work with your own kids and also with other people's kids and with the parents that you're working with too. I think that a lot of our listeners like myself need some support, and you are there to give it. So that's really great.
Yeah, can you just tell people where they can find you and especially about your parenting the after deconstruction cohort?
So I run an Instagram called Parenting After Deconstruction, and that's kind of where I talk about all things faith, spirituality, or try. And then I run the Parenting After Deconstruction cohort, which is where that all kind of came out of. And then I also write a kids curriculum called Zippy Curriculum. So those are kind of the two passion spaces, which is like, how do you empower churches who need to do things better? Like, how can we kind of think through that together? And then, yeah, how do we do that with parents? And because church works for some people and it honestly isn't a great place for other people. And I think we need to move away from like everyone needs to go to church or these are the things that exist. It's not one size fits all. I am a pastor. My goal is not to get you in my church. My goal is like, let's actually make this work for you. And when you've deconstructed, I mean, we see the research, church doesn't work for a while. So you should just know how to be empowered at home if that's the space that feels safe for you right now.
That's so great. Well, thank you so much, Sarah. Oh my gosh, this was so great. I have a feeling we're going to have you back on in some capacity. Stay tuned, everybody.
Well, that's it for this episode of the Deconstructing Mamas podcast. We love that you tuned in and hope that this gave you a little bit of grace and space for your soul to breathe.
Don't forget to catch up on any of our episodes that you missed. And remember to follow us on Instagram and Facebook at Deconstructing Mamas.
That's where you'll find all the information that you need about the podcast, as well as on our website, deconstructingmamas.com. You can also sign up for our weekly newsletter when you get there.
If you'd like to support the podcast, join our Patreon network for just $3 a month and have access to our private community with all kinds of extras. Leave us a review wherever you listen to podcasts or just tell others about the show.
Thanks for listening and come back again for our next episode. We can't wait to be on the other side of your headphones.